I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is Tech Central. I'm joined now by no stranger to the show, and that's Kim Reed, about to be former CEO at Takealot Group. I say former because he is stepping down as CEO and is taking on the role of chairman of the board of the Naspash-controlled company. Kim, last time we recorded a podcast, it was under very different circumstances. It was during the height of the hard lockdown in 2020, and you were not a happy man at the time. I trust you are in a less stressful environment today than you were back then.
Yeah, definitely. Duncan, it's been an interesting last 18 months. We went from that lockdown period where we were completely bolted down, couldn't do anything, to quite high growth in May. We've continued a relatively good growth trend since then in all the businesses, which has been quite nice. COVID has been positive for our business, certainly. I think, look, it's a worldwide trend really at the moment for e-commerce. I think it's a step change in most markets.
Yeah, I was amazed to see the latest numbers out of Amazon.com in the US and to see how they've performed over the last year or so. And that growth has been absolutely astonishing. So e-commerce has been riding the wave. I think initially here in South Africa ran into some challenges with the regulations, but since then has been growing well. What sort of growth has Takealot seen over the last year?
So we published our results in the Naspers financials, in the last financials, and you saw growth in COVID of the group growth around about 70 to 80% on the top line. Takealot broke into profitability for the first time last financial year, which is a nice place to be. So it's been a 10-year journey to profitability. While Superblist and Mr. D Food are still in their, growth phases, and that's in a slightly different phase of the business to Takealot, which is more mature. Although mature is an interesting word in our business at the moment.
Sure. So I mean, obviously, good growth on the back of the lockdown. But now that we've started to come out of that, I mean, we're still in a level 3 lockdown here in South Africa. But people are fairly comfortable out going back to the supermarket to buy goods. What have you seen since the relaxation of those hard lockdown rules last year? Has the growth continued?
Yes, we've always anticipated that we wouldn't have the same amounts of growth, but we've still got steady growth. So steady growth in the retail environment, to our competitors is probably 10% or lower. Ours is significantly above that. And we've always said that that'll continue. When you have a look at how the landscape has somewhat changed, you can really look at the way we look at it over 5 to 7 years. And when we looked at it e-commerce as a percentage of total retail in 2019, 2020 calender, 2019, we were looking at around about 1.5% penetrated e-commerce as a percentage of total retail. And then post the initial COVID boost, that popped up to about 2.6. And we would have anticipated that was only around about 1.7 before COVID, if COVID hadn't happened. If you look 5 years forward, our original predictions of growth in the market were probably, we saw a anything between 3 and 4% penetrated. Post-COVID, we think that that's probably closer to 7 to 9%.
Oh, wow.
In the next 5. Yeah.
Okay. So starting to get closer to the international norm.
Still very far from those, actually. If you look at the Chinese markets and the US markets and the UK markets, those are in their high teens already. In fact, the Chinese market is, I think, over 20%. I think Chinese market is probably roughly 20, depends who you ask, probably between 25 and 30% penetrated. Mm-hmm. So we're still a tiny part of retail in this country.
Interesting. I mean, I was looking at some numbers the other day. I was reading an article that said that Amazon's annualized sales have topped Walmart's for the first time. I think that was in the 12-month period to the end of June, if I'm not mistaken, making Amazon the second biggest retailer by sales in the world after China's Alibaba. And I'm surprised that Alibaba is at number one, but it's now Alibaba number one, Amazon number two, and a physical retailer, Walmart, has now been relegated to third position in terms of sales. Do you think we'd ever get to a similar situation here in South Africa where an online retailer could overtake the country's biggest retailer, which I think is ShopRite Group? I know
yeah, this,
dynamics in South Africa are very different, but do you think maybe a decade from now we could actually reach a point like that?
You know, I'm not sure that it'll happen in this country. If you have a look, we've always said that e-commerce is not going to take over the world. It's not going to be 100% e-commerce and no physical retail. It's never going to happen.
Sure.
I think that there's probably a steady state, which could be anything upwards of 20 to 30% in time in this country. You're still going to have physical retail. And look, when you mention ShopRite, so you're mentioning a slightly different part of the market, because you've got, I've just actually read an article, on Walmart versus Amazon grocery. It's in the FT at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
Which very interesting numbers. You know, you look at Amazon today, very small part of grocery. Walmart obviously much larger in grocery. Online, Amazon 40% of the market, Walmart only 7% of the market. So, you know, general merchandise has grown and grown particularly quickly for online players. Mm. The grocery side of things is still to come. If you look at the South African market, you've probably got a retail market of somewhere around about, I think it's 1.3 to 1.4 trillion, depending on which research you look at. Of that, roughly, I would say 500 to 600 billion of that is general merch. Another, you know, 5 to 6, maybe slightly more, is grocery. And then there's a very small apparel and footwear portion to it. So look, I think the summation of it is great opportunity and great potential for e-commerce still, because we're still underpenetrated in the market, but lots to do and lots of opportunity, and bricks and mortar is not going away. It's, you know, you compete head to head with bricks and mortar on a daily basis. You're competing with Massmart, you're competing with ShopRite, you're competing with, you know, Mr. Price, TFG, you name it. Lots of guys are all having a go at e-commerce, but e-commerce is not a market. Retail is a market.
So Kim, Takealot announced earlier this month that Mamonkgai Mahlare, who is the current MD at Illovo Sugar based in Durban, is going to be taking the hot seat from you at Takealot. And according to the press release, she'll be taking on the CEO role as of 1 October, and you're going to be moved into the role of chairman. You mentioned earlier in the discussion that Takealot is still very much a growth business. Why did you feel now was the right time to step aside as CEO and into the chairman role?
Look, it's been 10 years, which is a slog. And it's a highly operational business, but I think it's also important to have diversity in the business. Mm-hmm. You know, the business is run in a particular way because I'm there and involved in a lot of the stuff. I've been there since day one and started the business, which can be healthy and unhealthy at times. And I think it's just, you know, take a lot. We've broken the back of the profitability hump, so we've now turned profitable in Takealot, although there's still a lot of growth left. When I looked at the business and looked at the country and the dynamics within the country, I felt that it was time for me to not move out the business, remain in the business, but to bring somebody else in, which will bring you know, possibly a different way of doing things, a different way of looking at things, as well as, you know, we've always believed in our business that diversity breeds strength. It really is a more diverse company is a stronger business. And it's important in this country as well to have someone at the top of the company that is representative of this company and the country.
Right. Okay. So what is your role going to be going forward? Are you going to have more of an executive than a non-executive role? Will you be involved in developing strategy going forward?
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure that out as we go. To be honest, we right now. I was on an interview last night, and I said I'm Group CEO, Chairman, and Chief Bottle Washer at the moment, because Mamonkgai has not joined us yet, and I'm very excited to have her on board on the 1st of October. When she steps in, I'll move into the chairman role, and really, what I'll focus on is less operations. Mm-hmm. So less getting in everyone's hair on a daily basis, be it on, you know, the checkout problems or the return problems or the customer problems, and look more at the growth opportunities, which we have plenty in the business. So, you know, you look at, again, just if you look at the basic stats, as I was saying before, the penetration of retail, lots of opportunity, lots of headroom. And I want to focus on some core things that we've been looking at for a while, but just haven't got around to because, look, frankly, the last 18 months has been all hands on deck. There hasn't been an opportunity to look at anything but operations.
So can you give us some examples of those things that you'll be looking at, or would that be competitive sensitive information?
Yeah, look, I think there is some competitive sensitive information, but we will look at how we, you know, if you look at grocery for one, it is something that we want to explore and see if there's a part for us to play there. You know, perhaps broadening out our financial services capability as well is something else we want to look at as well. So those are just two kind of nuggets that I'll spend some time on, seeing if we can, if there's a part for us to play, actually. I think that's important. If there's no part for us to play, we won't be playing there.
Sure. And what about other African markets? Is there an opportunity there for Takealot?
You know, Africa is a tough place to do business in, and I think even tougher on the e-commerce side. I think we do see things happening in Africa and growing in Africa, but you look at the retail part of the market. You know, ShopRite has pulled back out of Nigeria. I think they pulled back out of Ghana recently as well. Yeah. A lot of South African retailers have pulled out of territories. So while we have ambitions, and you know, if you look at our vision and mission of the group, because we've kind of formulated a group and we can discuss that just now, but our group vision is really to become a sustainable and diverse products technology driven African champion. So Africa is in the wording. So we have got African ambitions. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, our mission really is saving customers time and money, enabling businesses, and creating opportunities. So Africa is an opportunity. I think we've got a lot more to chew on in South Africa for the moment. And you know, we'll look at, we actually review this pretty much on a yearly basis to see if we're ready to branch out into another African territory yet. And right now that's not quite on the cards.
Okay. And it's not a case of competitors going to swoop in and take away the African opportunity before you get a chance to get there.
Look, there's, you know, so you have got competitors there at the moment. Jumia is around. I don't really know how well they're doing. I think they're struggling. They're in very, very different markets, and they're in a lot of markets. And all I know is that when you operationalize our type of business in a lot of markets, you've got a lot of headaches. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to get that and keep it going. So they're one of them. You know, I haven't seen any huge competitors. I'm sure there are local e-commerce players in each one of the markets. But, you know, e-commerce being such a small percentage of retail on the African continent, I don't think we lose out on the opportunity by not moving now.
Okay. And could you possibly look at buying some of these smaller players to enter into those markets at some point?
Yeah, if that was, it's obviously if buying things is not always the solution, but if there are good players out there, sure. If that's an entrance to entry point to a market, we definitely would consider that.
Right, Kim, so you've been in the role of CEO for a decade now. If you were to take a look back, what would you say are the most two or three most important decisions that you took in that time that helped Takealot get to where it is today?
Yeah, so the one is people. So we make decisions on people all the time. And having the right people in the right places, be that on an executive level or on a middle management level or any level, that is the most important part in the business. And it's amazing how you make bad decisions. And I think the most important thing when you do make bad decisions, especially on the people side, is unfair to keep them in the business. And it's unfair on the business as well, because you really do feel it. So you've got to make those decisions quite quickly when things are going wrong and, you know, find the right people for the job. So I think we've done a relatively good, in fact, I think we've done an extremely good job in finding the right people in different parts of the business. And we really have three, strong chief executives in the business right now running each one of the businesses. And they're the right people for the job. So that's probably some of the good decisions. Mm-hmm. Another one was Mr. Delivery. So the Mr. Delivery business, which has become the backbone of our Takealot delivery team, which is our logistics functionality, has definitely put us in a really good place. And it wasn't an easy decision to take at the time because, you know, when you look at e-commerce, I think the ideas of e-commerce in the early days were try and do as little as possible in the difficult parts and kind of float on the top and build a platform and, you know, everything will come right. Well, it doesn't quite work that way. Mm-hmm. And we had to do some heavy lifting on the logistics side. And I think the logistics side, you know, we probably deliver, if I look at all three businesses today, we're delivering roughly 4 million packages, food deliveries, whatever, you know, but total deliveries a month today. Wow. I heard, I think it was a video from ShopRite recently where they said they delivered 1.5 million 60 deliveries in the year. Well, you know, that's a very different scale. So that decision has been a very good decision for us and one that we continue doubling down on to make sure that we can get our logistics capability expanded and better and better. What else? Nothing really comes to mind right now. It's interesting. We're a company that looks forward, not necessarily backwards.
Sure. I wanted to ask about Naspers involvement. They're your majority shareholder. How important has it been to have Naspers as your backer, and how involved have they been in the business over the years?
Sure, you've actually reminded me of something which I should have actually also said. So I think shareholding is extremely important. So, you know, we had Tiger in the early years. Tiger were unbelievable shareholders, and it really revolved around Lee Fixell, who was the Tiger representative, who I still, you know, talk to today, was an amazing investor in the business, backed us completely. And if you look at 2014, when they put $100 million into the business, you know, business sitting in the African continent on the tip of Africa. There was a lot of money and a lot of confidence they put into us to be able to enable us to build the business. Naspers has also been an incredibly good shareholder. And it's, as I say, it's very important to have the right shareholders on board. We're a business that really runs itself. So we've got good executives who, drive the business forward. What is nice about Naspers is you do get, to see other models around the world. So, you know, you can't just be insular and just look at what's happening within your own territories or country. You need to have a view on what's happening elsewhere. And they do remind us often about what is happening elsewhere in the world. And sometimes, you know, we'll agree and move things forward based on what they've seen. And sometimes we won't because we don't think it's purpose fit. Mm. So they are a great shareholder to have and obviously highly supportive of what we've done and where we're going to today.
Okay. So you can bounce ideas off them and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the bouncing ideas, I think, are largely internal. But, you know, when investment decisions come, then there is a lot of toing and froing as to business models, amounts of investments, whether they think it will work or not, whether we think it will work or not. Those are the type of conversations happen on a continual basis.
Kim, I wanted to get your view on the post office and all the noise around the post office at the moment regarding it trying to enforce its monopoly, alleged monopoly over parcels or the delivery of parcels over 1 kilogram. I believe they're engaging with ICASA in that process at the moment. What is your view on all of this? And if they were to be successful in enforcing that monopoly, what would be the impact on Takealot and the rest of the e-commerce industry in South Africa?
Yeah, so I think first of all, this is not a new thing. This has been going since I think it was roughly 2014. Okay. We looked at buying a business and came across this exact issue with the post office, and they were trying to enforce different types of things. So not a new issue. I think it is slightly disingenuous of an organization that cannot deliver the post to have to want to do some other things. It's beyond me. So, you know, I would say first get your house in order, prove that you can actually do what you should be doing, and then start having a go at some type of regulatory environment where you want to then increase your opportunity to do something. Why get more volume and just upset more and more people because you can't do your regular job. So, you know, I find it amusing that they want to do this. You know, it's counterproductive as well. If you think about the e-commerce industry, there are a lot of couriers out there who, you know, do bad jobs to good jobs. But packages are being delivered to people's houses, you know, on an hourly basis. This adds, you know, it's almost like the way I've seen it, and I can tell you why we haven't followed it that closely, but it's almost like taking a toll on packages. It appears they want to levy something if you now going to be delivering something below 1 kilogram. That's the last stuff that I saw, which I just don't get it. I really just don't get it. How will it affect us? It affects us less than most because we do our own deliveries. So, you know, we have very few deliveries today actually that are under 1 kilogram. And you know, if we have to get them over 1 kilogram, well, then we'll get them over 1 kilogram.
A free brick with your delivery.
Because, you know, the fact is it doesn't cost us more to deliver 1 kilogram or 2 kilograms. Sure. Industry, however, could be affected because, you know, that differential is going to make a difference for them, because they charged on a volumetric basis.
Right.
So, I could see a cost effect, but you know what happens with costs? Costs go to consumers. So who does that benefit? I don't get it. It's really a silly thing to do. And that's about my opinion on the post office.
I mean, what should the post office be doing in your view? I mean, the post office in some markets has actually played an important role in e-commerce. I think in the US, the US Postal Service is a big fulfillment agency for Amazon. Could the post office reinvent itself and become an e-commerce provider in South Africa, or do you think the organization is fundamentally broken?
Look, I can't talk to the internal workings of the post office, but I can say that if they were able to do it, they've got a great footprint of outlets, and I assume one of the issues will be technology, because I'm sure they have not invested in technology for the last X number of years. So difficult for them to have to catch up on that basis. But if they get it right, what a fantastic network to be able to deliver parcels to consumers. Mm. So, you know, my view on this is get it right. So spend your time not focusing on a regulatory issue.
Right.
Spend your time on actually fixing what's not right. Then put yourself up for a proper, then you've got a proper system to actually be able to deliver consumers, then have this fight. Mm-hmm. But having this fight in the midst of a place where, you know, you're lucky to get your post, I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So compete on your own merits rather than trying to running off to a regulator.
Get your business right. Yeah. Your business right. Why would you want to regulate something and then disappoint the consumer? At the end of the day, it's all about the consumer. And if a consumer can get a good product at a lower price, great. You know, and if this feeds into that, fantastic. Let the post office go and deliver what they need to deliver, but get it right first.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the Competition Commission is looking at this industry as well. They're busy with a probe into digital markets. Or I forget what they call it exactly. You'll know better than me, Kim. But just in light of that investigation that the Competition Commission is busy with, do you think there's anything government and regulators in South Africa can do to make the e-commerce industry more competitive and to grease the wheels of competition and make the industry grow faster than it is?
Yeah, they could leave us alone. I think that'd probably be the best thing to do, because regulators aren't known for making things necessarily less bureaucratic. So, you know, I don't know what the regulators are after in this market inquiry. I honestly don't know. And we're in the midst of it, and we're cooperating completely with the regulator, and have made various submissions and continue to make submissions to them when they ask us the questions and ask for information. But I honestly don't know what they're after, because frankly, we're a business that has been built up over time, focusing on customers, trying to make sure that we do a couple of things. Number one, that we give people better pricing, competitive pricing, and a great service, that we enable businesses. So we've got 4,500 sellers on our platform today. And we want that to just grow and grow and grow. And we charge them all in a fair and transparent manner, so we don't discriminate against our sellers as they come onto the platform. We create jobs in the franchisee environment as well, and drivers as well. You know, we've gone from 400 drivers to 15,000 drivers today, which I think there are very few companies in this country today that can actually point to the jobs that have been created and, you know, the ancillary jobs that come out of this type of thing as well, as you create a job for a seller and, you know, his business grows and he creates additional jobs as well. Mm. Very few companies that can actually point to the number of jobs that we've created. So why start having a look at how you actually regulate or restrict that? I don't get that. We're a country which is in need of jobs today.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at China, which is an interesting example, yes, the regulator is clamping down on the large tech guys today. In fact, the world is clamping down on a lot of the tech guys. But, you know, you look at China, they allow these companies to grow as champions, country champions, to get to certain sizes. Why? Because it created jobs and it created industry and it was good for the economy. Surely that's what this government should be doing for a company like ours. We're a South African company. We're, you know, today as a retailer, we are a level four BBEE contributor, which is probably the top 90% of retail today, mm-hmm. Where we sit as far as that's concerned. We have a diverse environment. And we're good for the country as far as that's concerned. So it's a struggle for me to understand why the regulator is focusing on what is essentially, you know, let's face it, 2.3% of total retail in this country. I mean, it just looks like a terrible waste of resource, in my view. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Kim Reed is a newly appointed chairman, or about to be chairman, of TechLot Group and outgoing CEO and chief bottle washer as well. He mentioned a bit earlier in our discussion. Kim, it's always great to chat to you. Thanks for taking the time to talk to Tech Central today.
Great. Thanks, Duncan. Thanks for having me.